Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bit Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Welcome. It is Social Distance Central, a show with the COVID name. It's not about COVID. During the COVID era, it's Bit Nizar. And with me, the voice of your Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's going on, man?
Just looking out my window here today at this lovely January weather that we've been getting. And
phrase du jour, I see it all over today.
Yeah, it's one of those times of the year where you never really know what the weather is going to give you. And of course, we've had sort of that taste of summer-esque weather that we got in May. And so you want it to be summer, but it's just not quite there yet. We probably got a few more weeks of this to deal with before we get into the proper sunny weather that we're accustomed to in July and August.
Now, I know as a province, as a region, we're doing really well when it comes to COVID-19, but you know, I'm choosing to look at this optimistically, that there was a stretch there when it was so nice in April and people were rushing out. And, you know, there was a lot of concern of, well, you know, those huge congregated masses again. You know, this is how second wave starts. I'm just curious, you know, if this time you're getting to peak June, yes, I understand. But if a little bit of rain kind of dampens some spirits to, you know, continue on our path of continued success with how we're battling COVID-19.
Yeah, you certainly hope that that's the case. And when we get into the summer, people are going to need to be responsible as well. But you're right, we are also at a very good spot as a province. I saw going around on Twitter yesterday, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I believe that we've, you know, of like 26 to 30 cases we had over last weekend, 15 of them were in one family because they decided to have a 30 person close quarters gathering. So, you know, again, it seems like as long as you're smart, as long as you're social distancing, as long as you're not getting into really big groups, those numbers are not increasing. And that's what we're going to have to be worried about when the weather does finally make the turn towards being sunny for an extended stretch, is that, you know, you can still go to the beach, you can still go to your local park, but you have to do it responsibly. You have to be distant from people, and you don't want to go to places where there's going to be an absolute ton of people as well.
I'm really good at staying distant from people. I'm just not there for for anyone. Emotionally, physically, I'm just not there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk on the radio, so we have to be sort of extroverted personalities, especially when we're on the air.
Sure.
But I'll be honest, like, from a mental perspective, and I know everybody is going to deal with this differently, and some people are going to struggle with their mental health when they're not as social, but like, I've been fine. And obviously, I haven't had any serious hardships to deal with, whether it's, you know, people getting sick from COVID or anything like that. But you know, as much as it's nice to get to see people a little bit again, like, I guess I'm a homebody. I've been fine with spending most of this time at home. Over the past few months.
I kind of do feel like the radio people who, you know, have had to move away and live in small towns, it's like, we're weirdly set up to succeed in this kind of environment. Because I'm like you, I've had zero issues. Like, this just reminds me of like the first couple of years of my radio career. So I'm transitioning quite well if this is a lifestyle that must persist a bit. But I totally get how it's difficult for some people.
Well, and I will say as well that it's nice to just, you know, walk upstairs into my home office area and put on a headset and do the show rather than, you know, the commute into downtown and, you know, being in the studio for 4 or 5 hours a day. So that part of it has been nice too, where, you know, you and I chat throughout the morning before the show to set up what we're going to talk about. But at the same time, I'm still sitting here in my sweatpants, so it's all good.
That's how it goes. Okay, on today's show, Ian McIntyre is going to join us at 12:35. He's written quite a bit in the past couple of weeks here, in the past week, talking about Travis Green, talking about Chris Tanev, so much. You can check it out at sportsnet.ca. We kind of started this conversation a bit on the back end of yesterday's show, and in the city, that conversation has continued. mainly talking about Chris Tanev, but, you know, we can extend it even further and talk about the future of this Canucks defense. But let's start where we ended yesterday when it comes to that discussion with Chris Tanev, because I was rather adamant on the idea that, you know, he's earned his next contract, whatever it's going to be, $4.5 million. It just I wouldn't be the team that would want to give it to him. So if you're looking at it from what's best for the health of the Vancouver Canucks moving forward, I look at it and I say, congratulations on your next contract. It just won't be from us. And I know that sounds like a hard line when it comes to the Trent Klatt theory of we'll drive him to the airport kind of thing. But, you know, congratulations on your new deal, but it just won't be here.
Yeah, and you know, I talked about yesterday that we're sort of on opposite sides of this one, where to me, he's a guy that you know can fit into your top four. You understand what he's going to be able to give you. You know the kind of player he is. And at that price point, if we assume that it's similar to what he's been making, he would be more affordable than any defenseman you would have to go out and try and chase down through free agency. And, you know, especially a right shot defenseman, those guys come at a premium right now. And you look at some of the guys that are going to be available that certainly could potentially be upgrades on Chris Tanev, depending on what you think of him. There's Alex Pietrangelo, but he's going to command a big dollar figure. Mm-hmm. Tyson Berry's available. People are very either hot and cold or opinionated on what he could bring. Justin Schultz is 29 years old. He could be a good option, but he's already been making, you know, north of $5.5 million, so he's more expensive. Sammy Vatanen is in that conversation too. Cody Ceci maybe, but, you know, beyond that, those are the kind of guys that you would be looking at to replace Chris Tanev, almost all of which would be more expensive and probably longer term too. And to me, it's just a time in the Canucks development curve where they can't afford to give up a top four defenseman and not immediately replace him with a defenseman of equal or better quality. And so that's where I look at it and I say, well, you know, would it be great to have Pietrangelo or Vatanen? Yeah, sure, it would, but it's going to cost you more. You know what you get with Chris Tanev. He would be relatively affordable compared to the market, you would think, anyway. And that's sort of how I'd frame that conversation in terms of why I think it makes sense to keep Tanev.
And the cost of what he is now, coming into the season, it made sense. We were kind of just at the point where it's like, oh, he's not always healthy, and you know, are you necessarily getting maximum value or even close to what his value is now? Because, you know, he doesn't score a lot of points, obviously. He had a good season this year in that regard. But, you know, 20 points is kind of what he gets capped out at. Coming into the season, it made sense. Okay, we need him because Quinn Hughes is coming in. We need to see what he is. And if there's training wheels, that's fine. Chris Tanev is your training wheels for Quinn Hughes. But that's done now, and the cap hasn't changed it, but the perception of his value should probably change, because we've confirmed what Quinn Hughes is at this stage, a player who, you know, he's going to be the lead star on whatever pairing he's in, so he's going to carry the other guy. It's no longer set up for Chris Tanev to buoy Quinn Hughes. And if we're looking at the stage, then I say, well, $4.5 million is a lot to pay for a guy that isn't going to be the lead on your pairing, especially considering he's not providing any offense. He's not going to play the power play. He's not going to do any of that. So we're looking at a very expensive penalty killer who has injury issues and puck moving. He's solid at it, but even that is starting to decline. I'm just curious. Like, I feel like we're going to get the worst years if you do sign a contract. And if in that stage, the idea you're talking about of, it's hard to find an immediate replacement. It's like, yeah, of course. Like, you have to make a decision on Chris Tanev basically before you find your replacement. That's, therein lies a problem. And I just worry that the fear of doing something, the fear of, hey, we're going to lose him, so we have to keep him. Just that constant clutching of what has happened in the past to set you up for the future. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a good move to retain him.
No, and that makes a lot of sense that, you know, he's a 30-year-old now, but, you know, he's got a lot of miles in his NHL career, even though the game's played number might not be very high. He's a guy, you're right, he's faced a lot of injuries. You can't necessarily guarantee that he would be able to stay healthy like he was able to this year. But that said, part of his ability to stay healthy is the fact that the Canucks were better defensively in some areas. And certainly, they're not a great defensive team still. They have plenty of room to improve. But the fact that they have improved as much as they have this year as opposed to last year, you know, a large part of that is Quinn Hughes, means that they're not spending as much time in their own zone. Chris Tanev's not having to go back for pucks on the end board and take hits from forechecking forwards as much. He's not having to block as many shots. And those are the kind of things. And this is something I thought, even through the last few seasons before Quinn Hughes arrived, when it essentially was Edler and Tanev, the only two reliable defensemen, it felt like, on some nights on the Canuck blue line, and they were having to log all the minutes and block all the shots, and both of them got hurt consistently because of that. Well, you hope anyway, as the team improves, that means they're playing a style of game that is more well-suited to keeping those guys healthy long-term, and that, to a certain extent, is what we saw with Chris Tanev this year, where he was able to play 69 games, and, you know, certainly a large part of that impact is Quinn Hughes. But at the same time, you still need someone to play with Quinn Hughes, someone of top four caliber. The hockey club has shown that they don't want to put Hughes and Stetcher on the same pairing, just because Travis Green hasn't really explored that, and they're both undersized guys. If you put Myers there, I know we talked about it yesterday, there are some people that really wouldn't like that. I don't have as much of a problem with it. What this really comes down to is whether you think you're going to have money to go out and replace Tanev in free agency, or whether you think Troy Stetcher is a top four defenseman. And I don't think either of those things are a guarantee, which makes Tanev the safe option. You know, certainly the safe option isn't always the right one, but it feels to me like a guy who has played his whole career here, is entrenched within the group, is a leader and a mentor for some of those young players. I wouldn't want to take him out of this situation right now.
The idea, and you touched on it yesterday too, of, you know, he's the mentor. I think the guys call him dad in the locker room, right? But at some point, the dad's got to let the kids run, right? That's, you know, I appreciate the idea of mentorship and leadership, but you can't have a bunch of leaders in this locker room. You do need some followers, and more importantly, some of those followers are going to graduate into those leadership roles, and the Quinn Hugheses of the world are going to figure that out, and people are going to look to them to being the lead, the rock stars of this group. And I don't want, like, I think culture and leadership, all that's important, but there's a point where you overrate it at times, that we get stuck and be like, oh, you have to keep him because he's a leader. Well, you have to keep guys because they're good hockey players. Mm-hmm. And then if they're leaders, then, okay, that's a bonus. The worry I get to when it comes to the Tanev conversation then is, okay, we know he's a good hockey player. It just and he's going to get a certain dollar figure. It's just the price is what you pay and the value is what you're going to get. And I just, like, $4.5 million for nowadays for penalty kill specialists just isn't valuable. You start going through contracts around the league, and, you know, all the guys that you mentioned, like the Sammy Vatanens of the world, you know, scores points. Cody Ceci is a hilariously bad contract. We know that. Mm-hmm. But like, even Nikita Zaitsev, who makes the same money as Chris Tanev, like, he's put up a 35-point season in his – or 36-point season in his career. Like, he's got offensive upside. All those types of players have offensive upside. So – paying a premium, so I'm not sure you're getting the value. And at some point, if you keep eroding away from value on your roster, like Louis Erickson's of the world, which, you know, that's an extreme example, but it's still they're not getting value. How many guys on this roster are providing value for you? It's Quinn Hughes, it's Elias Pettersson, Jacob Markstrom right now, given what his contract is, and JT Miller. That's by and large it. You can't just expect those four contracts to carry you the rest of the way. And if you just keep plugging in the holes with expensive players, you're spending on that middling part of your roster once again. And perhaps we should give a little bit of credit if there was some foresight to say, hey, what if Tyler Myers could be your future partner there? And if we're talking about immediate return, immediate replacements with Chris Tanev, what if they already set themselves up to do that last year? And now we're talking about replacing a top pairing D-man to play with Quinn Hughes. It's already in your roster with Tyler Myers. You spent that $6 million. Can you decrease on your roster elsewhere and get a number four demon, because Alex Edler provided just enough this offseason or this past season that you can say, okay, he's a number 3-4. Can you find another 3-4 D-man in the market for cheaper than $4 million? It should be doable.
Yeah, whether it's someone that would be an upgrade on Chris Tanev could be debated. The other thing we could look at is if they are able to free up some of that salary cap money, whether it's getting the Louis Erickson contract off the books somehow or whatever, then they could go and maybe chase a big fish. And I don't know if Alex Pietrangelo would be interested in coming to Vancouver. He hasn't signed yet. You're paying a ton of money for him if you want to bring him in, and he's 3 years old, and it would be long-term too. So
that's a bit more aggressive than I think I would be looking at.
But yeah, you're getting a 50-point defenseman in that scenario.
Yeah.
A huge addition, but you're going to have to pay big money. You're going to have to give long-term, and at the end of that deal, it might not look great, but at the start of the deal, you know, you've got Alex Pietrangelo and Quinn Hughes as your top pairing potentially. That, you know, you could hold that up there with many other pairings in the league. What might be more realistic is a guy like Tyson Barrie, who is almost the exact opposite defenseman of Chris
Tanev. Well, I was just going to say that we get caught in this idea of, okay, you got to replace Chris Tanev with another defensive defenseman. No, you just need to replace the minutes. You can choose to play a different way as well. I understand that there's not necessarily defensive D-men all littered across this roster, but you know, kind of Alex Edler's kind of slowly going into that role. He needs to be a bit better at it, but that's kind of what he is now. Good puck mover, obviously, but not as fleet as foot as it used to be. But also that style of D-man is just kind of fading away from the NHL. And I look at guys a bit lower as far as potential free agents. Like Brandon Montour kind of fits a role. You know, he's a restricted free agent, but like Radko Gudas is a decent puck mover who has those defensive abilities. Tyson Barrie, obviously on the high end as far as puck movers, but there's Mark Pisick. There's Trevor Van Riemsdyk. There is Dylan DeMello is going to be a free agent. It's those types of players that I think different prototypes than Chris Tanev, but if you want replacements, it looks different. It's not necessarily what you're talking about on an upgrade, but it's different styles of players. We don't have to look for an upgrade of just that defensive D-man.
No, certainly not. And so if the Canucks, and we know they've had interest in Tyson Barrie in the past, were to look at something like that, that is like a philosophical shift in the way you're approaching things on the back end, which could be a good thing.
Yes.
But that said, the one thing we've seen from Tyson Barrie is he is an offensive defenseman at the expense of defense a lot of times.
Correct. Yes.
And, you know, if you already have, you know, for lack of a better term, like a wild horse that you want to just let run free and do his thing, you've got that guy in Quinn Hughes. So do you really want another defenseman like that? You know, maybe you do. Maybe that's a forward-thinking way to build your blue line where you have two guys that can produce a ton of offense and potentially do it on two different pairings and two different power play units. But to me, this blue line still isn't improved enough yet where you can talk about, you know, not paying attention to the defensive side of the game. And I know we are seeing a transition to offensive defensemen, but I still think there's a place for the smart, solid, stay-at-home, not flashy defenseman who can help his team transition the puck, get out of its own zone, and give the puck to the forwards or the skilled players so they can go and do a good job. And Chris Tanev is still that guy right now for my money. Maybe he's not what he was, but that's value he brings, so that, you know, and not that Quinn Hughes needs a safety net, but it's awfully nice when you have a young elite offensive defenseman that he doesn't have to worry about whether his partner is going to be in a good position to help him out. Whereas, you know, with Tyson Barrie, if they were to play them together, you know, I could foresee a situation where they've got like five guys forechecking because they're so aggressive offensively. And I'm, you know, using hyperbole and speaking with my tongue in my cheek when I say that. But I think there is such a thing as too much emphasis on offense. You still have to be able to defend in your own zone because you can't play the entire game at the other team's end. And, you know, so a guy like Chris Tanev, you know, looking at his contract, looking at what he could potentially get, is a player that still has value in today's NHL.
The other guy we've mentioned as far as, you know, ways to engineer guys who can add more depth to the roster. It's like we've mentioned Jake Furtan's name as far as trade candidates, and is that a way you can manufacture someone's else coming into the roster? Brandon Sutter's name is bandied about of, oh, here's another guy that can perhaps make a trade and bring something back. And you know,
Jim Benning's go too.
Yeah, I was just gonna say he's mentioned
contract.
He's mentioned, you know, they intend to get a first round pick. They hope to get more picks back and recoup some. Well, there is assets to try to get some of the things that we are talking about. So it's not just the free agent market to try to replace Chris Tanev. There are other ways to go about it. And I kind of want to clarify something because Brandon in Nanaimo is kind of roasting me here. It's Tanev is not just a penalty skill specialist. Look at the Canucks' defensive stats. Absolutely. Here's the thing. As far as guys that make that sort of money, that like I'm talking about 4.5 and above. And really $5 million above, because you know Chris Tanev should be looking for a raise considering where he is in his career. Right? This is kind of Chris Tanev's last big contract. I'm skeptical he would get a short-term contract. We talked about that a bit yesterday. And I'm more concerned about AAV than anything when it comes to Chris Tanev. But guys that make that sort of money and don't put up points, there's very, very few. So that's when I say you're paying a premium for a penalty killer, essentially. Those guys, we look at across the league, nobody really talks about, wow, what a great contract. They're really getting value out of that contract and go through it. The Johnny Boychuk contracts of the world. That's essentially what you're paying for. And it's a dangerous slope to go down. That's what I'm talking about when I say a penalty kill specialist. Perhaps a better phrase, Brendan, is you're paying a premium for a penalty killer.
Or a premium for like a solely defensively focused defense.
Correct.
Because certainly Chris Tanev has a lot of value and even strength as well. And I think that's probably what Brendan and Nanaimo is getting at. But you're right that it is a slippery slope, especially now that he's getting into his 30s, where, you know, certainly he's been a good defenseman for them for a long time. But this is something we hear with contracts all the time. And, you know, look at a guy like Brent Seabrook. You want to be paying for what you think you're going to get, not for what guys have already given you. And that is a danger with signing Chris Tanev. The problem for me is that, in my mind, the Canucks are in a situation where unless they have a legitimate bona fide backup plan to go and get another top four defenseman that would either upgrade that spot or be comparable for a similar dollar value, then I think they still are in a spot where they need to have him back to help them improve on the back end over the next few years.
The other thing of holding on to the memory of him is you know, if you risk letting him go, you might then turn into what you might be able to become. And I understand the memories of it and the personal connection to Chris Tanev, to him in this city. Obviously, it's a great story. It's just, you know, so many people are angry at these past 6 years of consistent losing. And then there's this, oh, let's retain all the guys that have been here for the past 6 years. Well, not that it's all on Chris Tanev, but there is kind of a correlation there that perhaps we should start exploring the idea of moving past some of the players that have been on this roster that have been part so significantly part of this losing for so long.
Well, here's an interesting text in on the text line as well, unsigned text. It says, why is Triamkin dismissed so early? He replaced Tanev before. I have made my opinions on this. Very vocal. Nikita Triamkin had 11 points in 58 games in the KHL last year. He is not a legitimate top four option in the NHL. He's probably not even a legitimate top six defenseman in the NHL at this point. They would be bringing him back for depth to see what they could get out of him. Certainly he's a physical specimen at his size and his ability to skate is there too. But since Nikita Triamkin left Vancouver, there has been absolutely nothing in my mind that leads you to believe that he is the answer on the blue line, and certainly, certainly not in the top four.
I'd rather, yeah. Like the guy I mentioned earlier, like Dylan DeMello, would rather take a bet on him over Nikita Triamkin. We've been down that road, and it's so dangerous.
I can remember having this conversation on our airwaves last summer, and I can't remember whether it was with you or someone else, Bick, but at the time, there was a lot of criticism going around because the Canucks were potentially being linked to a guy like Nikita Zaitsev. And right. Yeah, you're going to pay a premium for Nikita Zaitsev, but do you know what you know Nikita Zaitsev is? He's an NHL defenseman. Nikita Triamkin, you cannot with any certainty, in my mind, based on his body of work in the KHL, say that he could be a consistent top six defenseman in the National Hockey League. It's just not a reality. And if we know anything about what the contract situation was like before, where he didn't want to go down to Utica, I don't know. I wouldn't even be entertaining signing Nikita Triamkin if he wasn't willing to play in the AHL right now. That's how strongly I feel about where he is. Now, I could be wrong. He could come in and perform a lot better than you'd expect and be a solid depth option on the Canucks. But to me, you know, based on what he's done, he's 25 years old now. You've got a good body of work for him at the pro level. He's a bottom pairing defenseman in the NHL at his peak, in my opinion.
There's a famous phrase of, it is better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt. For Nikita Triamkin, the myth of Nikita Triamkin is, it's better to not play in the NHL and be thought a top six D-man than to play and remove all doubt. So the myth of Nikita Triamkin just continues to grow batch. And
it's larger than he is.
I know. I'm done crazy. With it. I'm done with it. If you're so comfortable moving off Chris Tanev to replace him with Nikita Triamkin, you should be comfortable doing a lot of other things as well. You should be so comfortable with the idea of trading Brock Besser because you can just find guys anywhere you want and just get.
Because, hey, Cole Lynn is for sure going to be a top six goal scoring forward. Like that is how I compare the Triamkin, if we're going to use Tanev in this argument. That's how I compare the conversation. If you're confident you can replace Tanev with Triamkin, then you have to be confident too that you can replace Besser with Lind, because it's exactly the same thing.
Appreciate the text, 650-650. We'll get into a bit more, plus reset game of takes. If you want to get in, we're going to make our selection today for game of takes, your chance to take on Bailey Broadbent at Bailey Broadcast on Twitter, who sits atop the composite throne right now. 650-650, we'll reset that. Coming up with Ian McIntyre here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Oh, you know, when you hear that song, you know, our triple threat is around the corner. Ian McIntyre on the way. Joining us here on Social Distance Central, Vic Dazar and Brendan Batchelor on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Batch, the texts keep coming in over a massive Russian D-man.
Man.
Do you want to read this one or should I?
I will read it because I will give it the appropriate amount of scorn afterwards.
Okay.
This comes in from Jeffro, who says, "Sorry, but he is better than Stetcher." You could see that in their rookie years, but for some reason, Stetcher got all the ice time. If Stetcher is going to be on the team, then Triamkin should be too. I'm not even going to dignify that with a response. Like, it's ridiculous. Utterly fantastical. You are living in a fantasy world if you think Nikita Triamkin is an upgrade on either Chris Tanev or Troy Stetcher. If that is what you think, I do not know what to tell you. That's all I'll say. It's unbelievable. And I understand why people get behind the myth of this guy, because he was a bright spot as a young guy coming in that showed promise when the Canucks were one of the worst teams in the NHL. Guess what? They're not anymore. They've got Quinn Hughes. They've got Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser. The list goes on. Nikita Triamkin is not the answer. He might be a good depth complementary piece, but I would not be paying a premium, especially at the expense of proven NHL defensemen, to bring him in.
And also, we got a text here. It's like, weren't they supposed to build with young teams or young players from within? You know, he's a defensive D-man. Well, he's not young anymore. He's turning 26, right? And it's still, you know, in his prime, but he's not that youthful player that was once here. And also, he's not really a stalwart defensive D-man. I know it was a bad team back then, but his underlying metrics do not look kind even for a quote-unquote defensive D-man. And yes, there's some, you know, when you do play that role, that you do take on more shots because you're not providing as much offense, but they're not kind to him. He was not necessarily good. He was just a bright spot among a lot of bad around him.
Yeah, he absolutely was. That's 100% how I view it. And again, I've made my opinions very plainly known on this subject in the past. I just don't see it. Especially if you're paying.
We didn't intend to ask him about Nikita Triamkin, but certainly wanted to discuss his piece on Chris Tanev. He's been busy this week, iMac.
I'd love
on the Tanev piece. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I'd love to discuss Nikita Triamkin. I can't get enough of Nikita Triamkin discussion.
As Bats just said, the conversation and the myth of it all is getting as big as he is.
Yeah, it's kind of like this narrative now that you're either on one side or the other, and none of us really know because we haven't seen enough body of work and we haven't seen what he's been up to the last 3 years. I'm all for when you have a prospect, you don't ever give up on him until he's proven that he can't help you. And certainly there's no proof yet, definitive proof, that Nikita Triamkin can't help the Canucks. But there's two huge red flags for me. One is the fact that the team did as much as they could to help him when he was first here. I understand there's culture shock. I understand there's personal relationships involved. And not everybody wants to live in a foreign country, even if it means playing in the best league of the world. But he did express, after he left, unhappiness with some of the situation with the Canucks in Vancouver, and that he was going home to Russia and was going to build his career there. And then this past season, we hear about the things he's unhappy with there, with his coach and his team and his role. And so, you know, that's a red flag for me, that maybe he's going to be unhappy anywhere he goes if things just don't quite go his way. But the bigger problem I have with the idea of them bringing him back is this isn't a prospect now that you can invite to training camp with all your other guys who hope to show that they're NHL players and say, show us you can play and you'll be paid accordingly. This is a guy, because of the stage he's at, because of what he might be able to earn in the KHL on another contract, where suddenly now you're not paying him entry-level money anymore. Now, you're not going to pay him a fortune, but $2 million a year on a flat cap, and we don't know for sure that it would be that figure, but he's not coming for $875,000 on a two-way deal. He's coming for one-way money, and it's going to be in my opinion, Jordy Benn-type money. Maybe a Jordy Benn type contract, 2 years, $4 million. Well, that's a lot of money under a flat cap to pay for a guy that you don't know is going to be able to help you. He is such an intriguing prospect because there aren't many human beings, not on 2 feet anyways, that size, who play hockey and can get around the ice like he can get around the ice for a man that big. So he is intriguing, and I don't think he should be dismissed. I just think it's really difficult with the stage the Canucks are at to pay the money that's going to be required and know that this is going to be an upgrade for the team.
Well, it's not only just a big bet contractually. If you go back to, you know, when he did play, it's kind of a big bet on his own development. Where is he over the course of this time? But also, you know, there was a wantingness to make him into a style of player that he actually wasn't. So you're also making a bet on that he's going to fit into the role you want him to be, even though, you know, we talk so much about coaches maximizing a player's skill set. Are they going to continue down a path of, hey, we want you to be that bruising big D-man?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bick, that's part of the issue, though, is because they don't know what – I mean, people have this kind of ideal – that what a defenseman of his size should play like. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that he's that player. We don't know that he's, you know, sound and smart enough to be a solid defensive defenseman. We don't know, we haven't seen, that he's naturally predisposed to being aggressive and using that size and being a physical defenseman, somebody who punishes other people in front of the net or in the corners. And it certainly doesn't seem like he's going to be an offensive defenseman. And so where exactly does he fit? Like, even if, you know, you can handle the salary and you have a place for him on your roster, and he's showing that he's can maybe play, who knows, but where exactly is he going to fit? What exactly is he going to do to help this team? And I just think there's a lot of questions you could ask about that. And as Batch was alluding to, you know, 3-4 years ago, it was a different landscape here. You could, first of all, you had the money to experiment, but you also had players essentially auditioning for NHL duty in the NHL. You know, the team was poor enough that and opportunity available enough that you could bring in guys that you didn't know, you know, whether they could play or not, and give them a chance. Now this team is trying to, well, they're going to try and win something this summer, or at least win a playoff series or two. And next year they hope to be even better. They're not really at the experimenting stage anymore.
Ian McIntyre with us here on Sportsnet 650. And that sort of transitions the conversation to the defensemen that the Canucks are going to try to keep on their NHL roster already. And that's one of the biggest parts of this Trampkin conversation, in my opinion, is the opportunity cost. That if you're going to spend that money to bring him in, it's likely at the expense of Troy Stetcher or potentially Chris Tanev. And you had a piece up on sportsnet.ca about Chris Tanev this week. All of those things, to me, make even less sense to bring Triamkin in when you're not even sure right now as an organization whether you can keep both Stetcher and Tanev, and you're likely to see changes on your blue line with at least one of those guys this summer.
Yeah, I agree, Brendan. I think it's unlikely unless the cap miraculously goes up. I think it's unlikely that they will have both Stetcher and Tanev back, and I think both of those guys, there's a lot more certainty about what they can offer to you than what there is with Nikita Triamkin. Again, if you know, you could get him at an entry level rate and see what he does, but those, you know, that time has passed. You know, he was here on his entry level rate and he went back to Russia, and you know, there is a possibility. Let's say, you know, you don't want to pay Triamkin $2 million or whatever it would take, so he signs back in Europe, and it turns out you can't afford to keep the defenseman you have. There is a possibility they're going to be scrambling in the summer after this season to find another guy or two. But those guys that you can get will come with some NHL certainty. They'll also probably be a relative bargain, because this isn't the summer where guys who are looking for jobs at the bottom of an NHL lineup are going to be commanding big term and salary to play on a third pairing, or big term and salary to play on a fourth line. So I think there's probably cheaper options out there, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do. You know, he is an intriguing specimen and a prospect a lot of people are curious about, but he doesn't come cheaply in any sense.
And, you know, continuing on with the conversation, but moving over to the Chris Tanev situation, how do you think things will develop there? Because, you know, he's a 30-year-old defenseman. Bick and I were talking earlier. This is probably his last chance to earn a bigger contract in the league at around the same money or more than what he's making. He's, you know, you would assume would want some term as well, although maybe that's not necessarily the case. But, you know, do you think right now they're going to be in a position to keep Chris Tanev for next season and beyond?
Well, right now it would be difficult. And certainly if you're trying to figure out what the market value would be and offer him a market value contract, that would be difficult. Because we know that there are other priorities, namely Jacob Markstrom and Tyler Toffoli, who also are both going to be unrestricted free agents. I do think, though, that we all know this is an unprecedented season, part of an unprecedented time in our lives. This literally is a once-in-a-century pandemic. I mean, let's hope so, anyways. So there is no normal. There is no convention. So much of this stuff, it remains to play out in how, you know, it remains to play out in our personal lives and economically and for government. And certainly it remains to be played out for sports leagues and how they're going to operate. So this is my long-winded way of saying, I don't think you can go by what has traditionally been the unrestricted free agent landscape for somebody in Chris Tanev's position and say, well, therefore he should get this or this, and it's pretty clear. I don't think anything is clear. And as Tanev told me himself, he thinks there's going to be a ton of UFAs who essentially do a bridge deal, and that's my term, that wasn't his term, but essentially do a bridge deal at this stage of their career, where with all the uncertainty, including a salary cap that everybody is just guessing at, guys who are young enough and confident enough, and especially those who have a relationship with the team that they want to remain with, will do one-year deals and then see what the economics look like next year. Now, I know there was a suggestion maybe from Tanev's representatives that he was misquoted in my story, which is nonsense. I think what people need to remember, though, is when he says whether it's a one-year deal or a multi-year deal, you know, he really wants to stay with the Canucks. He's not saying he's going to take a one-year deal. I think what he's saying is that in this unprecedented time, you have to be pragmatic. You have to be open to all options, because this isn't a normal landscape for anything, including the NHL. And I do think he's genuine that he wants to stay. And you know what he has going for him with the Canucks? There is a level of trust. There is a relationship there. And management does want Chris Tanev to be part of this team. You know, we can see that, you know, he's still got value as a player on the ice. He certainly has value as one of the leaders on this team and as a mentor to people like Quinn Hughes. So there's goodwill on both sides to get a deal done. Whether that ends up with an extension, I think we're going to have to wait a while to find out. But I do think the sides are, certainly from Chris Tanev's standpoint, are willing to be creative and adapt to what's going on in the world right now in an effort to try to stay. But we're a long way from knowing whether that's going to be successful or not.
That's interesting to hear from the player's point of view of willingness to be flexible, obviously, given the circumstances. But, you know, I was talking yesterday and today. I'm kind of the mind of, man, what a great career he's had in Vancouver. You're going to earn your next contract. Congratulations. It just shouldn't be with the Vancouver Canucks. And when you factor in that flexibility from the team's point of view, that's what I'm kind of advocating for, is have that creative mind of how, look, he's obviously a tremendous player. I'm not sure you're going to get value out of that contract at the price that you're paying. And for more specifically, the back end of his career, that creativeness, that flexibility is kind of how the Canucks need to approach this offseason to want to be aggressive. They've right. set a standard now. Okay, they're kind of that middling team, but you got to try to explore the potential ceiling of this team. And I'm not sure contracts like this are going to explore that.
But Bick, we don't know what a contract like this is. Like if you're thinking that Chris Tanev is going to get a 4 or 5 year deal at $4 or $5 million a year, that's not happening. That's not happening.
I'm more concerned about the AAV, even in a short term. Just because you don't pay like the contracts we kind of look at and say, well, they're not really getting a return on that at all for low point getting high AAV guys, like those are some of the worst contracts across the league. And he's been awesome for this team. Don't get me wrong. It's just he slipped down the depth chart clearly because some guys have risen up past him. Yes, he maintains a certain standard, but I look at it and you're not going to get value for this contract, even if it's similar to where to what he's getting paid now.
So if he was willing to do, and this is just, I'm pulling this out of thin air. If he was willing to say, look, pay me what you paid me last season for 1 year, and on good faith, we'll play it out, and we'll see where we stand next year. You don't think that would be a reasonable contract for the Canucks? 1 year, $4 million for 10. Okay.
For me, I could see them doing that, and I would understand the team following through that. For me personally, I'm just saying congratulations, best of luck with the rest of your career. And I know that's tough, but that's just where I'm at. Just
he plays 20
because
minutes
of how high Quinn Hughes has ascended.
Yeah, he plays 20 minutes a night. He's out to kill every penalty. He's out to defend every late lead, and there's obviously a reasonable argument to be made that he's not the player that he was, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. But based on what I've seen this season, as the regular defense partner for Quinn Hughes, and the healthiest that we've seen Tanev in years, by the way, I think he's still a valuable player to this team. So, and if you don't have him, you're going to have to go and get somebody else. And again, this market this summer, it's going to be a buyer's market. It has to be a buyer's market. There are going to be bargains out there. But again, you're looking for next year at a team that wants to challenge for something, wants to have more points, more wins, more success than they've had this year. I don't think you can just blithely replace Chris Tanev and think that you're going to be better next year. I agree with you. You have to be careful. You always have to be careful. Look at the bind the Canucks are in with, say, the Louis Erickson contract and what a headache that has been. You always have to be aware of term. But I don't think there's going to be many UFAs hitting home runs this summer on 4, 5, 6 year deals. I think, as Tanev said, there will be a lot of guys signing for 1 year. And if there is the trust level for him to do a short-term deal, if I'm the Canucks, I fully explore that possibility because he's still a valuable part of this team.
He is our triple threat, and he's on fire today. It's Ian McIntyre. Check out his latest talking about Jacob Markstrom and his Masterton nomination at sportsnet.ca. Ian, thank you very much, and we'll chat soon.
You know, Bick and Batch has a nice ring to it. It's like Frick and Frack. You guys probably have no idea who Frick and Frack is, and I didn't really either, other than it's a saying, you know, Frick and Frack, like two sidekicks.
I'll take that over Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Well, Brendan, you better hope you're the D.
Thanks, Ian.
Tweedledum signing off here. Reach deep on the way. Shane O'Brien, Dan Murphy, Dan Robson, all coming up here on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks.